What's going on up there in Canada?
Nobody knows.
What's there to do in Canada?
Nobody knows.
What kind of folks live in Canada?
Nobody
what kind
knows.
Of animals and plants they got? Do they eat at similar
nobody
restaurants?
Knows.
Are all their cops the Mountie cops? Are there any good vacation
nobody
spots?
Knows.
For these and other questions, tune in to John and Stefan's Canadian Education Program for Foreign Podcasters.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another bonus edition of Blocked Party. This is the Canadian Education Program for Foreign Podcasters number 24. I'm John.
I'm Stefan.
And with us is a fabulous guest, first-time guest on the program. He is a prolific Twitch streamer, member of the Goo Crew. Ricky Peacock is here. Hi, Ricky.
Hello,
hey,
Ricky.
Hey, thanks so much, John. That was a very generous use of the word prolific.
Well, I know nothing about you, so I figure, yep.
No,
why
you know,
not,
the Pogging Barrel stuff. You saw the clip of Ricky talking about the Pogging Barrel.
Yes, I know the Pogging Barrel stuff. That was the first time I was ever, because here's the thing that I've sort of noticed over time. Is that a lot of these people are sort of getting added to the Goo Crew, and I'm not one of them. And so,
you're not a Twitch streamer. You got to be a Twitch streamer.
I'm just kidding. I don't give a fuck, dude.
I've heard you're interested in starting a Twitch stream, though.
Yes.
And so I think it's I think it's about that time.
Yep.
If Tony Hawk 3 plus 4 comes out, then I'm definitely going to become a Twitch streamer. But
you honestly should do the Jeopardy streams as well, like once a week or something. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's going to take a lot of work. Writing those boards takes like 2 to 3 hours on
average.
They're
really good, though.
Well, thank you.
I mean, it's so little effort to stream on Twitch, man. People just eat slop out of the palm of your hand. So
that's
it's
true.
You know, it's something to consider is all I'll say.
We had 12.
I'm fucking up because I think my only idea is extremely high effort.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm fucking up badly.
You texted me about this and you popped in during the stream, but we had 1,200 people watching us wave rocks for two hours. So.
Truly.
And not even hours. We started an hour in. We were fucking around for an hour.
Well, I know because it was, I tuned in and, you know, and of course I definitely do not make a habit of that, but I was okay, well, this rock weighing stream, you know,
you gotta check it out.
It's got the streets talking.
Yeah.
You know, so I got to check it out. And I logged on at 7:53 PM. So in theory about, 53 minutes, but you know, you guys are always late. So it was probably like 37 minutes after you started.
That's right.
And you hadn't even started weighing rocks yet. And I'm like, what are they doing over there? What's happening? And then one of your rocks was an orange, which was pathetic.
But one of Jesse's was a stick.
Like, you live near a lake. You couldn't find 10 rocks, or were you always just like, I'm going to do a bit where one of the rocks is an orange?
It was a bit, yeah.
Okay.
It was a bit. Because we're doing rock weighing stream 2 next year, and I was thinking it would be funny to do 9 oranges.
And one rock.
And say, I took 9 rocks last time. They haven't been replenished, you know? So I was able to find one, and then I just went and bought a bunch of oranges. So
what I really like about the Go Off Kings kind of media experience on Twitch is that you'll hear something like rock weighing night and you think, well, surely there has to be some hook that I'm not understanding in the brilliance of rock weighing night. And you tune in and sure enough, they're just weighing rocks.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it's either that or it doesn't make any sense at all. Like it'll be, you know, like I had a tweet or like a blue sky post about that where it's like Stefan and Jesse will say it's like hot dog night, but it's just Jesse wearing a hot dog costume and Stefan eating wet buns. And you're
And then watching just some of the most incomprehensible media that you could possibly find on the internet while 1,000 people who supposedly understand what's going on are all like rattling off just mental illness in the chat.
John, did you write that idea down, that hot dog night? That's a really good idea, actually.
I think we should probably, because we also did find a guy called the Hot Dog King on TikTok who will eat, like, he'll eat like weird hot dogs and stuff. So it's sort of, it sort of fits with what we're going for here, you know?
God. I mean, it is truly, I mean, you know, you guys have created you've created something that, you know, that is unique. I mean, there's no, and people like it. So, but you're right, Ricky, like I have a hard time wrapping my head around people who are so versed in the Go Off Kings lore, because you're like this, they're on every night, all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm the new guy.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of catching up to do, and it is really difficult to parse. I need like some sort of like tabula rasa to like kind of open up, like, you know, like dive into the world. I've had to just like kind of, you know, through exposure, kind of learn bits and pieces here and there, but it is a lot. It's a lot. It's can be a little bit overwhelming at times.
Yeah.
Oh, and then like,
that's by design.
You tune in and you can't even, it's like walking into a carnival funhouse. It's like all, you're just bombarded with noises and visuals and none of it.
Well, I said this when we were doing the Block Party charity stream, there's no sound alerts or even like sub or like follow alerts. And I was like, it was like too quiet for me. It was like, you know how there's the room you can go into where it's like the quietest room in the world and you can hear your own heartbeat and it makes you insane.
And you go insane.
It was like that.
Right. Yeah.
Twitch is like church. We're like,
I need a baseline. I need a baseline of like stupid noises, basically.
Yeah.
Well, the first time we did the Jeopardy stream, like I'm trying to host Jeopardy and I'm just like, in the middle of reading questions, thanks for the sub. Stefan's like, I'm in the middle of reading. Oh, thanks to Poopy Diaper 57. 18 months.
I have to be polite to our subscribers.
I know. I was just like, it was so hard to do what's ostensibly like an intellectual thing and then you're just getting just bombarded and Stefan's like, I could turn those off in your ears if you want. I'm like, please.
I probably should have done that. That was my bad. But
I think when Stefan becomes involved in a piece of media, I think the ability to call it ostensibly intellectual lowers dramatically, and he really does lower the bar to a place that is more comfortable. I think it allows, like, I feel much more at ease when Stefan is around because it just means like there's permission to be like a little bit dumb all the time, you know?
Yep. Permission granted, everyone.
Thank you, sir.
Well, that's why like doing Block Party with Stefan for so long has been so difficult for me. I'm like, okay, but I'm like, Stefan, please take my permission to be smart.
That's the thing. I think Rockwang Night was like one of the smartest streams we've actually ever done when you compare it to some of the other shit we've done. Like I felt smarter after Rockwang stream because I was like making educated guesses and stuff, you know?
Yeah, I suppose there's like a geological aspect, a scientific aspect.
For sure.
right.
Yeah, and I kicked Jesse's ass too. I fucked him up.
Nice work. So
he guessed the orange. He was like so far under on the orange because I think he didn't really take into account like the water weight of the orange.
Sure.
So he guessed way, way under.
Well, he lives in the south and they don't eat fruit down there. So it is tough.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, I mean, this one.
Oh God, he still has the rocks just in his room.
Of course. This one right here, he guessed.
Just for those of you who are listening, we are 4 days past the rock weighing night.
Right.
Yeah.
And Stefan just still has this rock.
No, we're like way longer than that, I think, at this point. But he guessed.
No, we're not. It was on Monday.
Was it on Monday? Oh, right. Because we were supposed to do it last week and then we did it this month.
Oh my God.
So this weighs like 3 kilograms and he guessed like 950 grams or something. So he doesn't know what he's doing.
That's insane, dude.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy, huh?
No, I just mean like that he's so dumb.
Oh, he fucked up so bad. I mean,
it's also funny to be like, you know, like if you were doing sort of like a classic insult in that situation, you'd be like, what? You don't know what rocks weigh?
Yeah.
It's like, not really. I've never really like thought about weighing rocks before. So no, I don't actually. How did you, I mean, God forbid I even ask this question, but like, how did the idea even happen?
The idea came about, DB posted this idea in March or May of 2020.
Right. I remember it being like 5 years in the making.
It was 5 years in the making. And DB said they should do a stream where they weigh rocks and guess how much they weigh. And the chat guesses how much they weigh. And then we've kind of just run out of ideas. So we're like looking in the backlog.
You could make the next Avengers film in 5 years. I don't understand what
we had to find the right rocks. I had to buy a scale.
Stefan's actually been finding one rock every 6 months.
Exactly.
You guys are still talking about Rock Night?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we are, Dan. Yes.
Well, okay, Ricky, we don't know anything about you. I feel like we said, you're new to the crew and maybe to some of our listeners. So yeah, let's stop talking about stupid rock weighing night. What's your deal?
Yeah, well, so I've been streaming on Twitch for about 5 years now. I heard that there was rumblings about an eventual rock weighing stream happening on Twitch. And so I figured I needed to get in on the gold rush before that hit.
Smart.
Yeah. Before that, I did live comedy, mostly like improv and sketch here in Chicago. There's a very illustrious comedy scene in Chicago, if you've never been. So I did that for about 10 years. And then I realized that staying in my apartment and playing video games, getting paid to do it, is better than going and doing improv for free to like six drunk white women in the audience.
So that's
kind of been my experience. I come from a traditional performance background, but also grew up an only child of divorced parents, so didn't have much to do besides play video games. So it's kind of a, you know, harmonizing of all of my favorite things in my life. I met through Chicago Second City. I met Dead Blossom Jesse. We did that together. And so I've known Jesse for about 8 years now. And then through them, just got plugged in with the Go Off Kings extended media universe. And it has been kind of the first, you know, the next step of the rest of my life.
Well, this is, you know what? It's actually nice to finally have a guest from that universe that I can respect because
Great.
You actually wow, do honor. Live performance. It's really just you and Demi and Tom. Yeah. Everyone else is a
and
fraud.
Luke.
Oh,
and
yeah. Luke. And Luke, too. That's true. Yeah, that's true. But like,
there's
you know,
something inherently... It's difficult to respect Luke regardless of his proclivities.
That's,
you know,
that's sort of, I mean, we love Luke, but.
Right.
I mean that's my whole thing with Jesse. Pogging Barrel. What the fuck is
pogging
that?
Pogging Barrel. Jesus.
Yeah, Pogging Barrel. Who would even say such a thing like that? But that's, you know, and that's kind of my whole thing with Jesse, right? It's like, okay, so you're.
Which Jesse?
Farrar.
Okay.
It's like, you're a dad? Okay.
Yeah. So is mine. So, you know, I know plenty of dads.
Anyone can be a dad. You know,
that's right.
It's like, what, you know, have you ever gotten on stage and performed other than that's in a live podcast setting? No.
No.
Not interested. So.
Yep.
So that's nice. That's good to know that I can have some respect for you in this world. That's good. And Stefan, I will say I didn't have respect for, but I've forced him to do stand up a couple times over the last few years. So,
and he's done
well.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
So I do
You've
have
gained
to,
some respect for me. Yeah.
Finally. Yeah. It took 8 years of working together, but we.
Yeah. Do you respect Dan?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he's a hardworking guy. You know, he's our producer. Yep. We couldn't do this without him. So
exactly.
I wouldn't say that, but okay.
I mean, there are other options.
I meant the hardworking part.
So. Oh, yeah.
No, but Dan does. I mean, you know, Dan used to be in bands and was very active in the live music scene as a videographer and, you know, part-time battle rapper. So, of course, you have to respect anyone who does battle rapping. Did you ever actually do a battle rap?
I wrote lines for a lot of other people, but I never did it myself. No.
Okay.
Are they okay to read on here or not?
Probably not.
Okay.
Mostly slurs,
Dan,
huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dan's
it
whole
was 2010.
Thing was...
It was a different time.
Okay, so it was mostly
actually,
slurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan's whole thing was rappers would come to him and they'd be like, we need a couple lines with the N-word in it and we don't want to write it. If anyone asks the question and Dan's
I never
like,
used
okay,
that
I can be that guy.
I never wrote anything with that slur in it.
Okay.
Thank you. Well,
that's good or any other that's racial.
Well, anyway.
I didn't write anything with that slur in it.
Okay, all right. Okay, moving
great.
On. Yeah.
Great, yeah.
Ricky, you did say that you make your home in Chicago, but do you have, this is important on the Canadian Education Program episodes, do you have any experience with Canada? Have you ever been to our country? What is your knowledge of Canada?
Yeah, man. So I mean, here's the thing. I feel like I mentioned before we started recording, but like, I feel like Chicago has a lot of Canadian expats. I feel like I grew up with a lot of being Canadian in America is so interesting because it's like this like little secret that you have that nobody would know unless you told them. And so sometimes I would just find out that a friend that I had known for years growing up through high school one day he would reveal to me that he was actually Canadian. And it's like, it really like warps your perspective of a person, you know? I think it's reasonable because I grew up with kids like in school and everything that once you found out that they were Canadian, that became the only thing that mattered to their personality, as if they were from some far off foreign land, you know? And, but truly, I mean, it was like the accent was like a slightly different and, you know, all of them. And I guess they weren't really helping the stereotypes, but all of them did without exception play ice hockey. Yeah. So, you know, I think most of my exposure to Canada is that, I mean, you know, I live close enough. There's a, you know, we share a border, right over in Detroit where my girlfriend is from. So I've never gone. But you know, I can see over there and see how things are doing whenever I'm in Detroit. And it seems like you guys got things, you know, going pretty well. It seems like things are under control.
I mean, I guess like in comparison, but yeah.
Yeah. You
know. Yeah.
I mean, right. We're about to elect our sort of version of Donald Trump coming up.
Yeah. So. I would say he's more our version of like Ted Cruz, which is
probably yeah, that's good. That's actually good, more yeah. accurate. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is a step in a direction yeah. compared to Donald Definitely. Trump. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, thankfully, according to Trump, you guys are about to become our 51st state. So
that's true. There's got to
be a lot of buzz. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Awesome. Yeah. Well, it'll be great to have you guys.
Honestly, as a performer, I would love to just all of a sudden have like yeah, that an American actually visa.
Would be really good for your career. Yeah, yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
I would be like, thank you, Mr. Trump. And you are a genius. And that is honestly kind of the art of the deal for me. It's just yeah. like, stay a lowly comedian in Canada for long enough to see your nation get conquered and then become a part of the nation where all the good comedy stuff happens.
Perfect.
That's yeah. right. Yeah.
So, and I guess for me, that means I could go do an improv festival on Prince Edward Island or something.
You
like
could
that.
Do that right now. And, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the thing with Canada. Could. It is not, yeah. In Canada, you do not need a performance visa for like a one-off show or if wow. you're not the main act. So like, when we brought up like Brian to do the live shows with yeah. us
or Jesse, like it was...
the poster doesn't say like Brian Quinby or Jesse right. Farrar. So like, as long as you are not like the headlining act or whatever, you don't need a visa.
Yeah.
So, okay. so you could do that tomorrow if you wanted. I mean, I think the improv scene on Prince Edward Island's probably pretty shit, but
yeah.
Yeah. But it's a place to start, I guess.
Sure.
Well, yeah, a lot of people do the Chicago to PEI pipeline.
Right, right. I'm happy to bring the advanced art of improvised comedy to the savage peoples of Prince Edward Island. So.
It does. I mean, I will say I had never... So Prince Edward Island was the last province that I had yet to go to. And I finally went there this September. And I was very shocked by how small it is. Like, obviously, you can look at a map, you can see
it's
how
like small
it is.
It's like the size of like a city, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Like, but you think yeah. of like Charlottetown is the capital. And I think a lot of people think of it as like, well, it's still, they've got one big city there. But like, no, Charlottetown is also insanely small. And it's nice. It's right on the water and everything. But yeah, it was almost like shocking. Like, you, even as a Canadian, when you go to PEI, you're like, oh, I'm in a different, it's a different world sure. here compared to, you know, being a from the mainland, I guess, or whatever. My curling podcast co-host is from PEI, and he does this joke where he refers to Canada as the island and Prince Edward Island as the mainland, which yeah. I think is like a popular joke to do there.
Sure,
and
I'm
like,
sure.
Yeah. And then I went there and I was like, oh yeah, that checks out.
I legitimately do think I would love to go there. It does seem like a comfy little place to go, you know? So I do all my talk. I will say, I'm just remembering, I have been in Canada for exactly one day. I was in okay. Vancouver
hey.
When I was going, I was in ninth grade. I was boarding a cruise ship up the little like tail of Alaska it departed from Vancouver. And I got to tell you, as a sheltered suburban ninth grader, Vancouver was like, it felt like, I don't know, like I was in a Disney film or something. I mean, it was like the weather was like incredible and like the city was beautiful and there was lots of buildings and there were a lot of homeless people. And I think that was the first time I ever really came face to face with that. And it kind of, kind of was, you know, something kind of broke in my brain in that regard. But other than that, I mean, it was like, I do have very fond memories of the one time I've ever set foot in Canada. Yeah.
Vancouver, if you come to Vancouver on a nice day, it's really, really nice.
Unfortunately, it was beautiful. It was in the middle of summer.
There's like, yeah, there's like 45 nice days a year is the problem.
Okay, great. Well, then I got lucky.
Yeah, you got lucky. It's like, it's Seattle weather, basically. So, sure, yeah, sure. I mean, I'm looking outside. It's overcast and shitty outside, and it's just like that most of the time. Right. So,
It's beautiful here today. Sun is shining.
Is there snow on the ground, though?
There is, yep.
Okay. All right. Well,
but it's +8 today.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And so John's Ricky, in Calgary right now. For you, so. That's it's like 50.
Oh, wow. Mm. Easy, breezy. Love it.
Yeah. Easy, breezy. And there is snow on the ground, but it is melting because it is so warm today. And it's going to be warm this whole weekend, actually.
Okay.
I mean, Calgary is the sunniest major city in Canada. We get 300 days a year of sun. So,
holy moly. That's awesome.
So it's beautiful. See,
growing up in the Midwest, I was going to say I have a high tolerance. I have been kind of forced into having a high tolerance for garbage weather. I hate the winter. I hate the cold. And 50 degrees in December sounds pretty nice to me. So I feel like, you know, I could swing it up there.
The issue
is
that it does get down to like minus 30, right? Like,
yeah, the last 2 weeks it's been pretty heavy in the minuses for us. So like I would say the last couple of weeks have been like 10, 15 Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
So it gets
Chicago's pretty similar. It gets pretty frigid here as well. So I guess I guess that's why there's probably a lot of cultural and kind of citizen exchange between the Midwest and Canada. Feels like we're maybe kind of like neighbors, you know. Even the accent, you know, the further north you go in America, you get closer and closer to the
Canadian
accent.
Like, absolutely the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys are kind of long lost siblings in some regard.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. Okay, well, we are, since this is a holiday episode of Blocked Party, we are reviewing a holiday episode of a Canadian classic. It is the Trailer Park Boys Christmas special.
Yeah.
Yes. And
so I think, you know, I do think Trailer Park Boys has crossed over into America, and at least a lot of people are aware of it, even if they have never seen it. But Trailer Park Boys was a television show that aired in 2001. It follows, as you might imagine, a group of people who live in a trailer park. It's set in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, which is I would say like a mid-sized town in Nova Scotia. It originally started airing in 2001. It ended in 2008, but then they've done a bunch of little spin-off specials since then. What we reviewed for this is the Trailer Park Boys Christmas special. So this was this came out after four seasons of the Trailer Park Boys, or three seasons. Came out in 2004, and it was meant to be a prequel. So this is meant to take place before the Trailer Park Boys become the Trailer Park Boys. It is theoretically set in Christmas 1997 and features all of our favorite guys getting up to their antics. Julian is running a Christmas light and tree stealing ring, as well as stealing Christmas gifts.
Yep.
Ricky gets out of jail and is not that happy about getting out of jail, because jail at Christmas time is good, I guess.
That's one of my favorite ongoing bits in Trailer Park Boys, is that Ricky prefers being in prison. Like, he just loves being in jail because he just has so much. He just smokes hash all the time in there. He has a great time, you know?
Yes. So he likes being in Canadian prison. We learn a little bit about Bubbles' backstory, how he was abandoned by his parents, lives in a shed outside of Julian's trailer. And then we get a little bit of the Leahy and Randy origin story, I guess, as part of the Christmas special. So I guess, you know, Ricky, we'll start with you. Did you have any awareness of the Trailer Park Boys before watching this special?
Yes, I had awareness of the Trailer Park Boys for the same reason that I imagine you have me on for this episode, which is that there is a character with my name in the show.
I honestly didn't make that connection when I had you on.
Okay, great.
But, yeah.
We weren't hey, we got to do the Trailer Park Boys Christmas special. Do we know anyone named Julian?
I am familiar with the Trailer Park Boys, and it is almost exclusively because of the character Ricky. With a name like Ricky, growing up with it my whole life, it's like, it's common, but it's like just uncommon enough that there's only several characters in media that people will often point to. And I get associated with every single one of them nonstop. And so yeah. the Trailer Park Boys was often brought up by,
I guess, like, Ricky Bobby must have been really bad.
Yeah.
Talladega Nights. Can I tell you, I had a Ricky Bobby reference thrown at me 8 days ago. It hangs over my head like a sword of Damocles to this day.
Was the reference? Was it "if you ain't first, you last"?
No, I was out doing some volunteer work and I drove somebody from one place to another, and they said, "Hey, it feels like I'm getting driven by the real Ricky Bobby." And I was like, "Yep, that is a movie that came out where someone had my name."
Oh my god.
He drove too, I guess. You're right.
Yeah, he did indeed drive too. I don't think he was a chauffeur in that movie, but it's been a while since I've seen it. I don't know if they feels like in my mind they came out at a similar time, but Talladega Nights. And then my real last name is Peacock. And so when Katy Perry's Peacock came out, that really ruined several years of school for me.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, my only exposure to the Trailer Park Boys before this, I went to an art school in college. I did major in comedy writing and performance. It's taken me so far in life. Now I'm the newest member of the Goo Crew on Twitch.tv. Yep. And I couldn't have got there without giving, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to Columbia College. I had a roommate who, God bless him, nice enough guy. He is what I can describe as like an early 20 teens menswear kind of pick me sort of guy, where his whole personality was all of the interesting things that he liked, and all of, like, you know, he likes to have opinions about different kinds of wine, even though he was 19 years old. And sometimes he would just hang around in our dorm room in a tailored suit, or he would have like selvedged denim jeans and things like that. And one day he, because of a character named Ricky in the show, he was like, "Oh, Trailer Park Boys, you're not familiar. Well, it's one of the, you know, one of the keynote pieces of media coming out of our neighbors from Canada." And he forced, as he was known to do, this was kind of his go-to date move as well with the girls he would take back to our dorm. He forced me and our other roommates to sit on the couch while he put on an episode of Trailer Park Boys, and basically just watched us watch it. And I got up after about 5 minutes and I was like, "Hey man, I'm not going to watch. I don't really want to watch this." I would say it doesn't have necessarily a negative connotation in my mind up until watching the Christmas special, but it certainly has a specific flavor where it's just constantly been referenced at me because of my name. I hate to do this because I actually did enjoy watching the Christmas special. Like I mentioned before we started recording, I watched it 3 times for the sake of this episode.
Thank you. That's honestly more work than even it's ever put into the show.
It lives in a similar space in my head as Rick and Morty. And it is simply because it is a comedic piece of media that I have had referenced at me because a character has my name for like a decade now.
Right.
But
and it is kind of like a beloved like comedy nerd.
Yes.
Like especially in the US, because like up here it was pretty mainstream, but if you're in the US, I can see it as like, and obviously Rick and Morty is too, but when it first came out, it's a similar sort of tenor, right. I think. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. The same kind of, I feel like they share a little bit of audience overlap. I feel like, you know, it's kind of like the Spencer's Gifts crowd probably also really like both of these shows. It is truly unfortunate that they both decided to include a character with my name.
I feel like Trailer Park Boys does have that thing where it, and I'm not familiar with Trailer Park Boys, so I guess I should say that as well. This is the first like full episode of Trailer Park Boys I've ever watched. I shouldn't say I'm not familiar. I mean, obviously I live in Canada. I'm well aware of the Trailer Park Boys, but I had never watched a full episode before this. And it does that thing where smart people like it because there's a lot of nuance in the writing that smart people attach to, but then dumb fucking morons also like it because they're like, I'm like one of them. Fucking grew up in a trailer park too. I'm fucking right. Like fucking Ricky's exactly like my fucking brother, Jimmy. Like he's the same in and out of jail. Fucking yeah. And so then that's the problem with shows like that. Sometimes where like you want to feel like, well, I'm actually, this is a very, you know, this is a very, not highbrow is the wrong word, but like, you know what I mean? Like I'm experiencing the show because I think the writing is unique and it's like comedy genius. And other people are just like, yo, fucking man, they're smoking weed, going to jail, stealing shit. It's fucking awesome, man.
I think that's a good, that's like a perfect, like you're splitting the uprights in such a smart way with that formula though, you know, like writing a stupid show in a kind of smart way, you get everybody on, you get the stupids and you get the smarts all in one. And so like, I think that's, you know, it's good work if you can get it. I did actually legitimately. So like, I think I wrote, not having not watched any of it and only having seen, you know, like memes of the show and having clips sent to me and whatever, I think I wrote it off as just like, I don't know. I feel like in America, we don't do very nuanced media about like poor people.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly just look at how stupid they are. And I guess Trailer Park Boys is also very look at how stupid they are. But this episode, I did really legitimately appreciate some of the writing that was going into this episode. And like, having seen none of it before this, like some of the little beats, like they really like took me off guard. And I was like, wait, that was like, that was good. There was, I wrote extensive notes on my phone during my second watch through.
Nice.
Every time there was a beat that I legitimately had to like, you know, be reverent of, I wrote in parentheses, funny. So, and there's a few on here. Oh, so, yeah. You know, they did some good work, I will say.
I think my favorite thing about, I mean,
Stefan, you're a fan, right? Like you watched it in the original.
I watched
run.
It because my dad loved it, and I would watch it, and it was like the early. I think as Dan said before we started recording, this was kind of like the peak, almost like season four, this special, right. And then after that, still some funny stuff, obviously. But like, I think for me, like the physical comedy in it is like just some of the greatest like sight gags and physical comedy of all time. And it's basically all Ricky and Mr. Leahy.
That one part where Leahy gets up from the table and then falls back into the fridge.
I legitimately was so impressed at the choreography of the everything clattering. I was so deafeningly loud, and that whole scene. Let me tell you, I wrote down in my notes. Let's see. Jim dresses Santa, stumbles extremely loudly into a refrigerator, and then I put a sub note. I'm for some reason reminded of the lighthouse in this moment. The performance that Mr. Leahy gave was so reminiscent of Robert Eggers' The Lighthouse with Willem Dafoe. It was like, it really did evoke a much higher art form than I was presently watching in that moment.
It's like silent film, like Buster Keaton level physical comedy sometimes. Yeah. Like Leahy especially is so good at doing the backwards, like slip and fall when he's drunk. Yeah. Rest in peace, by the way. He passed away a few years ago. I think maybe the best part of the show. It's him or Ricky. And Leahy being drunk, he's so good at that. There's the scene where he spills all the eggnog all over himself too, which is just fucking incredible. And then whenever Ricky is like tossing stuff around, like when he's on top of Leahy's trailer, ripping out the decorations and like throwing them down. It's so funny. There's I think it's like a season two or season three episode where they have a scheme where they're stealing shopping carts, and they throw them down into like a lake and then dredge them out. And they're like, well, we've dredged them out, so now they're like ours or whatever. And there's this, I don't know, that, no, you know what? This is a different one where Ricky is continually trying to climb up a hill, like a small embankment, and it's super muddy and slippery, and he falls down it like 10 times in a row. And
it's like Jay Leno.
It's so fucking funny. But the physical comedy of Trailer Park Boys is like second to none.
As a Canadian too, like I feel like this maybe would go underappreciated if you were American or you didn't grow up somewhere cold, but there is like an unexplained, no one ever mentions it, but it happens like four times throughout the episode where Ricky just slips on ice.
Yeah.
But he never fully falls.
Yeah.
Okay, I was really wondering about what that was.
Yeah, so that's like a Canadian thing. It's like a classic, like, everybody has that one friend that, like, refuses to buy winter boots.
Yeah.
And you're like, just buy, like, just get some boots. Because they're not, you can get cheap boots. And you would always have this one friend growing up where it'd be like, they're just always in running shoes. And there's like 3 feet of snow on the ground. They're in running shoes. And you're like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Definitely.
And they, and you'd be walking with them and they'd just be slipping on the ice. Like, and so that to me, it was so funny and perfect because that is such a Canadian thing.
Yeah.
That everybody just has this one guy that refuses to get boots with grip. And it's constantly slipping. And yeah, I just love that they never acknowledged it. It was just like a thing that was kind of happening that to me added to the realism, but was also very funny. And it was never overplayed. He never like slipped and fell backwards or whatever. It was just like, he was constantly losing his footing a little bit. And I loved it.
There was the scene when he's standing out in front of the church selling weed. He slips and falls. And I was like really confused by that. But like, now it registers perfectly. Cause I mean, in the Midwest, in Chicago, it is like ungodly cold in the winters. It's the same thing. There's always people. I mean, I'm sure in Canada, there's always the guys who are like, no, I don't mind the cold. I wear short, you know, I'm the kind of guy that wears shorts outside all the time.
Yeah.
I can't stand those guys. And it's the same kind of guy that honestly, frankly, the dude that introduced me to the Trailer Park Boys, my old college roommate, he was kind of this guy. He would always go out in like dress shoes with like pounded leather soles.
Yep.
And like there would be a sheet of ice on the sidewalk and he's like crawling to class on all fours. So, I mean, yeah, now I really do appreciate that visual. But like the physical comedy in this, I do think was my absolute favorite part. Every time they did, I found out through reading all of the reviews for this episode on IMDb that there's apparently a lot. So I didn't know going into this that it was a prequel. And there's a lot that they allude to of like the origin story of certain things. So the car bit in this episode, I absolutely love.
So good.
I mean, I don't, you know, I was looking up the director and I think he mostly is just known for the Trailer Park Boys. But the way that he was directing in the shaky cam style, the way that he was directing the kind of like jarring physical violence whenever the car would hit something was so good every time.
Because it feels like you're in the car like drunk driving with Ricky, basically.
Yes. Every scene where the car slams into something, I has a parentheses funny around it. So much so, in fact, I was watching this last night with my girlfriend and she... I told her, I'm like, you're not going to find this funny. It's like, you know, it's a little bit too on the stupid side of the spectrum for her. But I will say, in my notes, I have, let's see. So in the second time they bring up the car bit, they're pulling into they're trying to get past Mr. Leahy's car and they're pulling into the trailer park and they drive into what is, I guess like a porch or something like that, just utterly demolishing that. And that the cinematography and the audio design of that scene was so jarring that it made my girlfriend laugh out loud.
Yeah.
Where she was otherwise like trying to like fall asleep. I mean, one of the highlights of the entire episode.
I mean, crashing into the cop car door is so, just like taking, and it's so, and it's like, also just the timing of it where like that scene is starting to kind of calm down a little bit. And then Ricky just, takes the door off of the cop. Like
that was another great scene. That was the thing. It was like, I think the writing was pretty subdued, all things considered. I think there's a universe where like, I know, and maybe this is how this show gets later on, but from just the one episode I've seen, like, they didn't play up like we're stupid hicks, you know, like they have their character mannerisms, like Julian likes scamming and Ricky likes prison. But like, besides that, it's not like, oh, we're so stupid, we can't tie our shoes and we're falling all over each other and yada, yada. But there are moments of like, in between like the smart writing, there are just moments of absolute calamity where like in that scene, the cop car scene, the cop comes up and he's asking like, does anyone want to tell me where you got your Christmas tree? And apropos of nothing, a man screaming off the side of the screen goes, does somebody want to tell me who'd suck my cock or something like that? And they really, really nailed it with me on that one. Those like little moments of just absurd humor. I really, really appreciate
it. So I don't think they were in this episode, but there's an ongoing bit called the Bottle Kids, which is kids living in the trailer park, and they just throw bottles at the characters and the film crew. And it'll just be in the middle of an episode. They'll just be like, bottle kids. And then they'll everyone will try and like kind of run away or like duck. And it's just kids riding by on bikes, throwing glass bottles at them.
That's so good. Like Akira Toriyama, like the scene of the guy dodging the arrows or whatever, like real life effects. That's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did find it in my notes here. I have in quotations, I don't know, would anyone here like to suck my cock? And then in parentheses, funny. So that's kind of, you know, the wavelength that this show is operating on.
I think what you get with the later, sorry, John, I think what you get with the later seasons is that the schemes get like more cartoonish, and that sort of takes you out of it. Whereas in the early seasons, the schemes are like, I mean, they're stupid, but they're like realistic, and they're stupid and smart. Like, so for instance, there's one scheme they have where they're going up and taking people's patio furniture off their front porch and dragging it down to the curb. And then they're like, well, it's garbage now, so we can take it for free and it's technically legal. And it's like, that's such a fucking perfect mix of like stupid and smart.
Yeah,
and definitely. It's like that, they strike that balance really well, I think.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I love too, with the car crashes, it was funny every time. There's like five different car crashes or whatever. It's funny every single time.
Well, first one in the part when they're leaving the prison, he's drunk driving into all of the dumpsters and the cop cars.
He
and stuff.
Completely topples over a shed. Like the destruction. Yeah. I mean, the budget of the episode had to go mostly into all of the shit that they were destroying with this car.
100%. And I loved that every time Ricky would say like, oh, I was in jail, I haven't driven a lot, or like, I don't drive in the winter because
I'm always in jail.
In the park, that was the one that really, I immediately was like, on my first watch through, they had me at attention with the car bit. They were driving into the parking garage when they were going to steal all the gifts out of people's trunks. And not only do you watch in real time this car get completely fucked on the concrete beam. Like, that is one. They're not getting a second take at that. They demolish the side of the car. And then at the moment he does that, he says, I'm not used to driving in this driving in winter stuff, while he's in a like heated covered parking garage. Great.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, I loved all of that. Like,
just
that
the
was
little
such a
touches
funny,
though, right?
Yeah, like, yeah,
when
it really is.
When they're stealing the gifts and there's like the old couple next to them just like looking at them like, what are you doing? You know? And they're and I think Julian's like, oh, we
locked our keys in the car.
We locked our keys in the car. They take the gifts and just leave.
I think like what you were saying, Ricky, about like the subtlety is, I think, you know, a lot of people really like Letterkenny. That's sort of like the new.
Right. That's a spiritual successor, almost.
Trailer Park Boys, I'd say for sure. Yeah, you're still talking about, I wouldn't say they're not painted as poor people necessarily in Letterkenny. There are poor people in the community, but the main characters.
It's more small town, I think.
It's more small town than it is like we're poor people. But it is the same thing where. I don't know if this is just like a feature of Canadian comedy in general. I guess I've never really thought about it, but like, yeah, definitely the thing I would say about both of those shows is that like so much of the comedy is underplayed. Like there's very little like, where it's like, we know you're laughing at home. Ha ha ha.
That's right.
It is very underplayed, which I think, yeah, is something, like I said, I've never thought about that as being necessarily a Canadian comedy trait, but it makes me feel like maybe it is at least a little bit, because you definitely see that in both shows where they're never like hitting you over the head with, you should be laughing now or whatever the case. So
I thought that was really good. I really appreciated that. It does remind me, it is evocative of what I would probably consider my favorite show of all time, which is, I guess, the American version, which is King of the Hill.
Yeah.
It is the same kind of like, Jesus, at the risk of just absolutely demolishing my reputation, I'm going to quote an improv aphorism here, but it is playing to the top of your intelligence, which is that like, even though you have a lot of like ostensibly stupid characters on the screen, you're playing them in a smart way.
Yeah.
Where they're not just like, you know, their pants aren't falling down and they're tripping over themselves. Like their characters are given real like depth. Even the scene of, I don't know why I was so gravitated towards Ricky's dad in the show, but the scene where they go over to Ricky's dad's trailer, I love Ricky's dad so much. He seems like such a genuine guy. And then like his dad and Ricky and Bubbles all like help Ricky come to the realization that not only is, I guess not that Santa's fake, but that, yeah. but that Santa and God are different, two different guys.
Yeah. And he's like so shocked and taken aback by it too.
Yeah. Like, and prior to this, like all of the language that Ricky had used, because one of the kind of like through plots of the episode is that Ricky is trying to get his lover Lucy back. And she gives him an ultimatum of make sure you give your child good gifts and give me a fur coat. And Ricky, at first hearing this, he goes, oh, Santa will take care of all of that. Like, he just is not even remotely worried about it because he's just going to write a list and send it off to Santa and that'll be taken care of and he'll have his life back to the way it was. And that kind of him learning that Santa won't take care of all of his problems becomes like pivotal to the entire episode. And then from what I understand, the future of the character, which I really do appreciate.
Yeah.
I think too, like you said, they're not, even that scene, it's not really played for laughs
in a way,
between Bubbles and his dad. Like they're not like, you fucking moron, and God are not the same. It's like they're coming from a place of concern.
Right.
Yeah.
Of genuine concern of like, oh, wait, you think they're the same guy? Like, it's important we let you know in a very, like, parental, life lesson-y type way.
And it moves the plot forward, too, right? Like, it's not just played for him being stupid. It's, like, actually important for the story.
Yeah, totally. And I liked the scene later on with Ricky's dad, too, where they're trying. Ricky's now we're further in the episode and he's realizing he's maybe not going to be able to get Lucy the fur coat. So he's got kind of one last scheme and the dad's like, well, we have to go to midnight mass. You can't spend tonight doing whatever. Like we got to go to midnight mass. And I just loved to me, cause this was also such a Canadian thing. I loved the dad's reasoning being like, we're going to midnight mass. That's the way it is. And that was like just saying those words. Cause that is such a Canadian, like that's the way she goes.
Yes,
you know, like it's such a Canadian thing. And that was almost like, you know, the dad putting his foot down in Ricky's mind. Like, well, he said, that's the way it is. So, you know, and then both Ricky and Bubbles kind of looking at each other and being like, well, I guess that's the way it is.
Honestly. Yeah. I mean, it really is. Canada and the Midwest share so much in that regard. I think like kind of the niceness and everything. And yeah, just that simple, like just saying that's the way it is. And like, just the weight that sentence can hold. I mean, in that scene, like it's just like, oh, well, my dad says so it is. But like, I do feel like, and I don't know if this is the same about for Canada, but like in the Midwest, at least, that is kind of how mostly men deal with like immense generational trauma, is just being like, well, that's just the way it is. You know, that's just, yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. Stuff like that. You know, you throw back a beer and then that's just, you just kind of handle it, you know? And I think like chalking things up to that's the way it is. I think I really resonate with that growing up in the Midwest as well.
Totally. Right. It's like that's the way my dad did it. That's the way his dad did it. Exactly. That's the way we're doing it. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. It definitely, and like I said, that may also not be just strictly a Canadian thing, but just like being a Canadian and having been through that of like,
definitely
my dad loves to say, well, that's the way it is. You know,
Makes sense.
The other big Canadian thing that I loved, that came up often was, Bubbles believing in the like transformative powers of a bonfire. That is so Canadian. Like,
yes.
I absolutely grew up with people who thought that like having a bonfire was the best thing you could do. There's no topping it. There's Disney World, whatever you think, your wedding day, nothing is as exciting as just getting together with
That's
the boys
right.
and lighting a bunch of shit on fire. Like it was, again, I think you watch some of this stuff and there's just certain things as a Canadian that hit you like right between the eyes. And growing up in small town Ontario, which is kind of an extension of small town Nova Scotia, it was just like, yep, I absolutely knew and still know guys who are in their late 30s like me who are just like, God, nothing better than a bonfire.
A bonfire will fix everything. Yeah. Yeah. That's it's awesome.
Like, man. Because I'm not like that at all. That's not really my bonfires don't do it for me, but there are people.
I don't mind them, you know.
Yeah, it's fine.
I do think I felt the transformative power of them like in high school, where it's like, you know, you're going. You know, friends, parents are out of town and you got the backyard all to yourself and you just get a big fire going. I can feel, I can tap into a primal part of myself that is like, yeah, that, I guess a bonfire does fix everything now that I think about it.
There's something about it like being dark and having a fire in the middle. I think too, it's also like what you were saying about the, that's the way it is kind of being a feature of masculinity. I also feel like that's partly a bonfire too, right? It's the, like we get
it
vulnerable.
It breaks down. It breaks down at the bonfire. Exactly. Yeah. That's the only time a man is allowed to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Get drunk.
You're sitting around
dark
a fire.
Out, so it feels a little bit secret, you know, it's like nobody knows exactly what we're seeing. We've got this beautiful fire there. It is like a time for a man to maybe be vulnerable, or it's like, you know, maybe Laura's going to come to the bonfire and I can finally tell her how I feel, or, know, whatever. Like it definitely has that feel for sure. That really resonated with me too. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I had not really considered that, but the small Canadianisms are so adjacent to the Midwesternisms that I think if I had been looking for things like that, where it's like, okay, how does this parallel my life growing up in the Midwest, I think these things, I mean, they all do speak to me, like slipping on the snow, you know, obsession over a bonfire, people getting absolutely, shit-faced drunk on Christmas, things like that. Like, it really is. I do think it's a great, I mean, even just, I don't know. Yeah. Now you're really, really selling me on the smartness of this show even more in ways that on three viewings, I didn't even fully pick up on.
I think it's just because we, you know, this is a show about Canada. So, and not knowing Trailer Park Boys, but knowing so many people in Canada who love them, you know, I think it's just natural for me to really focus on that. I mean, Letterkenny hits harder for me because, you know, I think an American would watch that. And even some people in Canada, like Stefan being from Vancouver, like small town Ontario is just a different thing. It's like its own country. And Letterkenny like hits on that in a way that, like I said, I think is foreign to even people within Canada.
Yeah.
And I think that like Americans watch Letterkenny or Trailer Park Boys and they're like, oh, they're sending up Canada. This is like, you know, they're exaggerating things about Canada. Cause that's what happens in sitcoms, right? You exaggerate, you know, how things are to prove a comedic point. But like Letterkenny is so accurate to small town Ontario.
Right.
Like they're not playing it up. Like those are the types of people that are in small town Ontario.
Right.
They do talk like that. They do act like that. Like it is. So I think when I was going into watching Trailer Park Boys, having seen all of Letterkenny and none of Trailer Park Boys, I was like, those were just some of the things that I was like really tuned into, was the sort of Canadian-ness of it, I suppose.
I think like Trailer Park Boys characters, you'll see guys like that in real life in like big cities, you know, like just like dumb guys like that. Right. Whereas Letterkenny is like, that's exclusive to small towns.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say like, a lot of like media that doesn't come from America, it'll tend to be like, Canadian media really a lot of the times will try and be like Canadian, you know, and try and like say something about, you know, this is our Canadian show about Canada in some regard. And I think maybe because like to me, I saw Trailer Park Boys as like, oh yeah, you know, it's Canadian. It's about Canada. They, you know, Canada, Canada, this, Canada, that. But like it does speak to a larger truth. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of the same tropes in King of the Hill, a show that is very much about small town suburban America. It's the exact same concept of like they're not upselling it, even if it seems like these characters are outlandish. Like they're actually writing very true to like real dumb guys that are just out there. And I think sometimes we forget that like a lot of the population is just like dumb guys. Like you get kind of wrapped up in a kind of heady, kind of like online internet media bubble. You're arguing with people on Twitter. You know, you're telling a kid to kill himself on Call of Duty Warzone or whatever. And you you kind of like, you lose the context of the world, which is that like most of, at the very least, the Western world is just like dumb guys just like trying their best. And I think that like so much of media, it's a very difficult kind of media to write, a very difficult kind of comedy, because so many people do fall back on like, aren't these guys stupid? Look at how stupid they are. But I don't know anything about like the cast of Trailer Park Boys, but I know, for example, with King of the Hill, Mike Judge, he wrote King of the Hill about his, like, he just wrote about what he knew growing up. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I watched some media about hillbillies and this is what I wrote, you know? I can only imagine with how like true to the style and true to the people and true to the you know, the proud nation of Canada that Trailer Park Boys feels. It's, I mean, it's clearly they are like really, really in touch with this genre of dumb guy, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, they really do nail it. And the other thing I wanted to bring up before we move on to the quiz is that this was a showcase show to start, and that growing up in Canada, Dan and John know this, that was like, I guess that was the equivalent of like Cinemax maybe in the US, where, you know, after like 10 p.m. on Showcase, it was softcore pornography.
Great. Hey, you want to see a titty on there.
Yeah. It was like Red Shoe Diaries, like all that sort of thing, right?
That was the big one. Yeah.
But you can even tell with the Showcase logo, because there's like a lady like taking her clothes off in the logo at the beginning.
Yes,
right?
Dude.
And so it felt sort of subversive to just be watching anything on Showcase, I think. As a kid, especially.
Yeah.
Can
totally.
I ask the narrative structure? What is, why do, I was wondering this on my second watch through. Mm-hmm. What is with them taking to camera so much? Is it like they break the fourth wall a lot? The camera is a character in the show.
Yeah.
Is the show framed as like a documentary?
It is. It's like a documentary about a trailer park.
Okay. I couldn't, I didn't really see anything about that when I was doing my extended research, but interesting.
It was really heavy on that in like the pilot, which was like a full movie.
Right.
It was like following them getting out of jail for the first time.
Yeah. There's like that a bit where I forget what episode it is, but they're like robbing a convenience store or something, and they like get the cameraman to like help them rob the convenience store.
Okay,
so they're like
great.
Always, it's like more so than like The Office or something where like it's sort of like there in the background. Like the camera crew in Trailer Park Boys is like fully involved.
That makes sense. I think that's like most of those kind of shaky cam, like camera crew style shows, they do end up kind of completely abandoning that premise because I think it's just harder to write for.
Yeah.
Abbott Elementary is the most recent one I can think of.
I was
where, like,
literally going to bring that up. Yes. Where they're doing it like The Office.
Yes.
But there's no acknowledgement at any point that they are filming a documentary. But they talk to the camera like it's a documentary
all the time.
All the time.
They do the thing that constantly pulls me out of the show, which is they have no in-universe reasoning for why there would be a cameraman in somebody's apartment at this time, you know? Like, there was a recent Christmas episode of Abbott Elementary where they were having a Christmas party at one of their houses or whatever, and they wouldn't talk to the cameraman, but whenever somebody would do something kind of snide, they would do their, like, take to camera, like, are you serious? Kind of, and then in that exact moment, I'm like Inception snapped, you know, like I'm like kicked into like, whoa, wait, why did they just look at me? Why there's a cameraman in their apartment, you know? And like, there were a few moments with Trailer Park Boys with the Christmas special that I felt similarly, where they would speak directly to the camera all of a sudden, where there had been no mention of there being a camera crew following these people around other than like the shaky cam style. But it is interesting. I mean, yeah, I can see how a show would kind of just abandon that premise and kind of just go with it after a while, but good to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do. I always have thought that about Abbott, that it's, I think it's a really good show and it's
phenomenal.
It's very
show.
Funny.
Phenomenal show.
But it's like, it is funny that, you know, the Office and I guess to a lesser extent, Parks and Rec as well, gain such ubiquity that in pop culture, and just like that style of show gained such ubiquity right. that when they were creating Abbott, they thought like, well, we never have to explain this. We can just have characters talking.
I think
camera.
It's just the TV show mockumentary where they talk to camera. Yeah. Like it's like yeah. a genre now.
It's just a
yeah.
genre now.
And so you don't need to have the explanation. It's just assumed right. like, oh, I guess it's a documentary or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, it is interesting that style was kind of like never done. And now it's at the point where they feel like, we don't need to do an episode where we say there's a camera crew at this elementary school.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. Yeah. And you're right, Ricky. Like, I think it's funny in The Office how, especially in the early seasons, it always felt like if the cameras were outside of the office, it was like an explicit permission type situation. Like,
yes.
Jim is having a party at his house. So it's right, like, oh, that right, makes exactly. sense. We'd give a slice of life. We're going to Jim's house because he's having everyone from the office over for a party. But then, yeah, with Abbott, you're like, yeah, it's literally a cozy night in between the couple that's on the show.
Right, right.
Why would you be like, yeah, we should have the cameras over to exactly. film us yes. watching yeah. Christmas movies on the couch in our PJs? Like,
no discredit to either of the shows, but it does. No. At the moment they take the camera, I am instantly reminded, like, wait, why did they just looked at me, you know? Like, yeah, I am now in this scene. Why am I in the apartment, you know? Like,
yeah, no, totally, totally.
I have an extensive, before we get to the quiz, I want to make a couple of points here.
Please,
because I have an extensive list of some of my favorite points. There was a few parts where I really, really got like I think the biggest laugh of the entire episode for me, and this goes back to the kind of just like random just like chaos that they'll just inject into a scene every once in a while. There's an exposition shot at the opening, the entrance of the trailer park. A dog is barking and a woman goes, "Shut the fuck up," and then a man immediately goes, "Brenda, you shut the fuck up." And just apropos of nothing, that like ambiance, I was like, damn, I think that might have got me.
They're so good at that. Like, they'll just have really, little really, things really like that. Smart. They're so good at it. Yeah.
I was also a big fan of this. You know, I think Ricky's kind of story arc, I don't know if it necessarily gets underplayed, but I do think it is kind of the core of the entire episode, because the title is, you know, the Trailer Park Boys Christmas Special, Dear Santa Claus, Go Fuck Yourself.
Yes.
And now that's interesting. It does go back to, you know, Ricky becomes kind of disillusioned about Santa Claus and Santa Claus's role in life. He kind of, Santa Claus, the concept of Santa Claus is taken away from him, and suddenly he can't just wish for all of his problems to be solved. And it's up to him to kind of make things happen in his life. But at the end of the episode, when they're at the midnight mass, he comes to the realization that the point of Christmas is getting stoned and drunk with your family. And, you know, he's like, who here is drunk right now? And everybody raises, and he's like, who here is stoned right now? And everybody, you know, some people, and then he's like, and then everybody raises their hand. But then in that moment, he goes, you know what? I got a lot of extra weed from the whatever. Who wants weed? And he starts handing out weed. And in this moment, it is in this moment that Ricky himself becomes Santa. And I feel like closing the narrative loop, it is only moments earlier that he says to Leahy's face, he name drops the title of the episode. He says, Dear Santa, to Leahy's face. He says, Dear Santa, go fuck yourself. And everybody's obviously at this point at home, they're standing and they're applauding because that's the name of the episode of the DVD that they bought. But yeah, I really, really, it was on my third watch through that I realized, like, oh, Ricky becomes Santa. He realizes the meaning of Christmas. Whatever illusion of Santa that he had has melted away. And then he steps into the shoes of this caring man, you know, and like embodying the spirit of what Christmas truly is. A man who at the beginning of this episode, you know, told his dad, don't diss jail, because he loved being in jail so much over the holidays, because he just gets to smoke weed and drink. And now that is basically the only difference is that he realizes by the end of the episode, Christmas is best spent smoking weed and drinking with your family rather than with other prisoners in jail.
Which is classic Trailer Park Boys.
Yes, I really did appreciate that kind of narrative arc of Ricky throughout the episode. It really tied everything together for me in a way that I didn't really understand on my first watch through. So it just gets better the more times you watch Trailer Park Boys Christmas special, Dear Santa, Go Fuck Yourself.
Yeah, I think it's like, you have... And I'm, you know, coming to the same place as you, Ricky, or coming to this from the same place as you, having not seen it before. But it's like, those are the moments where the characters have heart that you realize also. And that's similar to King of the Hill, too, I think, and other shows of this ilk, where it is, if there is a sense at any moment that the show is like, look at these dumb guys, it's right. also giving these dumb guys like something that you as maybe a non-dumb guy, or you as maybe a not poor guy, or sure. whatever, can be like, well, that's the same. That's, I also am like that. I it just want to be with my family. I want to get drunk and stoned. I mean, not me, but you know, a lot of people, that's their thing on Christmas. Right. Is, yeah. I was just going to get drunk with my dad and that's going to rock or whatever. Yeah. I think that definitely stuck out for me too, is that, you know, the character, like, cause I think for me, my exposure to Trailer Park Boys has always come through. Yeah. Like either like little clips online, or I saw them live at a concert, weirdly. Sure. I think I told you about this before, Stefan. It was, Our Lady Peace was headlining. It was called the Fear of the Trailer Park Tour, and the Trailer Park Boys, they did some like pre-filmed skits with Our Lady Peace that they would play in between bands. And they also came out on stage. Wow. But like, if you don't watch the show and they're just like trying to be funny in character, you're like, this sucks. I don't this is, you know, they're just playing dumb idiot guys and fuck off, you know. But I think watching this episode, you're like, okay, you're immediately kind of rooting for them. Like there's a heart to the characters, even Bubbles, right? Like the very first scene,
very much so,
is Bubbles like, I can't open this Christmas present until my mom and dad come back.
And I didn't realize that his parents are completely out of the picture for the entire show. I didn't realize that this was like massive lore for the show, where Bubbles' parents are. So until, again, I was doing research after the fact online. But, you know, yeah, I appreciated it more in that regard. And, you know, some people in the IMDb reviews were saying like, maybe not a good first episode, because it kind of sets up, you know, or it kind of gives lore drops for a lot of the first four seasons of Trailer Park Boys. But it was only minor stuff like that that I like didn't necessarily understand. I will say there was a moment that really jarred me, having never seen the show before, where the one of two people of color in the show is propositioned to smoke weed, and then Jim Leahy cuts the power to the trailer park, and the record player slows down, and the black man in the scene says, that sounded cool, for it, without context, no ostensible reason whatsoever. And in that moment, I'm like, what are they getting at here? Why is the black man, the only black, or I guess one of two black men in the show, listening to a record slowing down and going, that sounded cool? I learned later on that they're apparently, there's some sort of rap group that goes on with the nerds in this episode and things like that. There's a couple things there where I was like, don't really understand what the hell that was, but... that was having the context now. I do have trailerpark.fandom.com/wiki/Dear Santa Claus go fuck yourself pulled up on my second monitor right now. And so stuff like that helped me kind of glean. I will also say, with regards to Tyler, the black character of the nerds, I think there was maybe two black characters actually, but Tyler, the first speaking, the first spoken dialogue from Tyler, who I think goes as Tyrone later in the show.
Yes.
I think he maybe changes his name. I don't want to get into that. but anyway, the first time a person of color speaks in this entire episode, it is at the exact to the second halfway timestamp. Like at the exact halfway point of the episode, we have Tyler saying something like, all right, sounds good, or whatever, when he's being instructed by Ricky to go run a scheme of some sort or whatever. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting how they kind of have things lined up like that.
Yeah.
Great observations. I think we learned a lot this episode. I feel.
Yeah, totally. We don't usually have guests come this prepared, which is good for us because we don't ever prepare.
It's amazing what you'll notice when you watch the same stupid Christmas special for a sitcom from the early 2000s. When you watch the same episode three times, first the two times back to back, and then the third time after sleeping on it, and then you know really getting a chance to digest, you really get to pick out a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope you're ready for the quiz. John's got some questions prepared here.
I think I am.
Okay. Yeah. So this is the Canadian quiz. There will be six questions, two easy questions, which are designed to be gettable for an American.
Great.
And then two medium questions, which are designed to be easy for a Canadian, but maybe hard for an American. And then two hard questions, which might be hard even for Canadians.
Okay.
So they'll be worth, the easy questions are worth 1 point each. Medium questions are worth two. Hard questions are worth three.
Yeah.
You'll be playing against Stefan. Stefan will write his answer down. You can just say your answer out loud whenever you're ready to answer. Great. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. This is question number one. Easy question worth 1 point. The Trailer Park Boys takes place in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, which experienced a huge population and economic boom when the first bridge was built across the harbor, connecting it to which largest city of Nova Scotia and its capital?
Fuck, I like always fuck up with the Maritimes legitimately. But I'm locked in.
I think I'm locked in. Okay. I think I'm locked in.
Okay, go ahead.
Is it Halifax?
Halifax is the capital of Nova Scotia. Yes.
Wow. Very unbelievable.
Nice. Very
unbelievable.
Nice.
I should also mention another big portion of my experience or my kind of relationship to Canada is I did listen to a lot of Stan Rogers at one point in my life. So he, through his beautiful folk music about the proud country of Canada, is kind of a window into Canada. And there is a song where he talks all about Halifax and Nova Scotia. So
there you go.
I have at least one small touchstone.
You might be ready to go. You might do well. Okay, here we go. This is the second easy question. Perhaps Canada's greatest holiday export. We covered which singer last year whose adult contemporary take on Christmas carols, an album called Christmas, has sold over 16 million copies worldwide.
Fuck. Am I not going to get this too?
Oh, come on, Stefan.
Well, I got Halifax, but
we literally covered it on last year's Christmas episode.
I'm like struggling here.
Interesting. This has got to be one of those people that like they just play it off as they're a big time American celebrity.
I got it.
I mean, yeah, he is absolutely. You will know this person.
Yeah, you will know this person. I'm locked in.
Okay, I don't think I know it. I don't think it's probably somebody with a deep dark secret that they're actually really Canadian.
No, he's pretty out there.
Proudly Canadian,
I would say.
It's Michael Bublé.
Yeah, Michael Bublé.
Oh, Michael Bublé, of course, dude. Okay, yeah. Man, he's one of the most Canadian guys out there, huh?
Yeah,
he owns
a hockey team. He still lives in Canada, doesn't live in LA. Okay.
Yeah, okay. He lives in Burnaby, BC.
Yeah.
So, now, what's wrong with that?
No, nothing. He's got a great place.
Yeah. Oh, no, we've got some geographic rivalry going on.
All right, so this is the first. So Stefan's at two, Ricky's at one. We are now on to the medium questions. So as I said on the episode, I saw the Trailer Park Boys live on the Fear of the Trailer Park tour. It was headlined by Canadian rock act Our Lady Peace, and direct support was provided by which Canadian band? Whose hit One Thing peaked at number 16 on the US charts, and whose hit Paralyzer nearly topped the rock charts as well.
Finger 11.
Yes.
Yeah. I was in the process of writing that down once you said Paralyzer, to be clear.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realize they were Canadian.
I didn't know they were Canadian either.
Canadian as they come.
I honestly didn't know they were Canadian.
I think they're from like Arlington or something.
Oh my god! That's awesome. Yeah, I guess it makes because they've been in a lot of like NHL games. I feel like that tracks. Okay,
there was a snowboarding game that I played on the GameCube that had Paralyzer on it, and I was obsessed with that song as a young like 9-year-old boy or whatever.
I'm a paralyzed.
Oh, yeah.
Great tune. Okay. Well, Ricky, you're at 3. Stefan, you're at 4.
Ricky's doing good.
Yeah, you're doing very well. Here's the next medium question. Justin Trudeau is in danger of being voted out of office.
Blackface. Sorry.
What?
Sorry. The only thing I know about Justin Trudeau. But anyway, go on.
The answer is blackface. You got it. great. Justin Trudeau is in danger of being voted out of office and the Conservatives taking over. Which Conservative Prime Minister did Justin Trudeau take over from, winning a majority in the 2015 federal election?
Okay, I'm locked in.
Do you think that as an American, this is a name that I would recognize?
He was Prime Minister for a while, like eight years, probably. Yeah. So it's a name that when I say it, you might recognize it, but you might not.
It's kind of a boring name, and he was kind of, he's an evil guy, but he was a boring guy too. So
I think I could be completely off base here, but I think I have an answer.
Okay.
Is it Stephen Harper?
Wow.
It is Stephen Harper.
Nice. Holy shit.
Peacock.
Is this the high score? I think it...
No, the high score is 7.
Yeah, the high score is DB somehow.
The high score is DB, but so Ricky's at 5. So if Ricky can get either of these final two questions he would be the new American winner.
Also, you're in a position to like win here too if I miss one of these. So
Yeah. Okay, Jesus. So Stefan is a perfect 6 for 6. Ricky is 5 for 6 here. So we are now on to the hard questions. Here is hard question number 1. Jonathan Torrens gained fame for playing J-Rock on the Trailer Park Boys, but his early television success came on 2 CBC shows that he hosted. Name either one.
Truly, I don't even...
Fuck.
He's one of the nerds who becomes a rapper later on, and his rap name is J-Rock.
100%. I know this. I know what it is.
You'll know struggling. Come on.
No, I know, man. It's like so obvious, and I'm going to hear it and be like, for fuck's sake. I think maybe the only
other Canadian television show I could even name right now and say SCTV, despite knowing that is good incorrect. Guess.
It is incorrect, although one of the shows does have the initials SC, so that is interesting, but...
Jesus.
Fuck. Oh, my God.
No idea.
Stefan is blanking.
Street Sense.
Wow.
You gave me a big hint there, but that's the one I was thinking of, yeah. And what's
Street
the other
Sense
one?
Was a... which was... It was kind of fucking cool. It was
give
basically...
Give me half points for that, by the way, because
yeah,
you
that's
gave
fine.
Me
I'll give
hint.
You give half me, points. Yeah. I forgot you hadn't answered yet. Street Sense is like, it was like a show that taught kids about like, being a smart consumer. So they would like review products and talk about like advertising scams and things
whoa,
like that.
We would never get something like that in America.
Yeah.
No,
so
way.
It was really interesting.
Yeah, they literally had a thing called The Pit. And so like they would review like a consumer product, and if it didn't live up to some of its billing or whatever, they would say it was fit for the pit, and they would take the product and they would throw it down this like manhole on the
That's
studio.
That's awesome.
It would like blow up, and yeah, it was awesome. And
wow,
then,
I love that.
The other show he had was a talk show, a teen talk show where he rapped with teens about the real issues, and it was
called
Jonovision.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was after Street Sense, where he became kind of a known figure. Okay.
Sure.
Final hard question. Ricky at 5, Stefan at 7.5. 3 of the 10 largest islands in the world by area belong to Canada. Name 2 of the 3.
Okay. Locked in.
Yeah, I think I'm locked in as well.
Okay.
I mean, Prince Edward Island. I'm sorry. Wait, maybe I'm. Oh. So this is you're saying not just Canadian islands, but the biggest Canadian islands is what we're talking about.
Correct. Yeah. So 2 of the 3 of the biggest islands in the world belong to Canada.
Okay.
Named
besides Prince Edward Island
area.
Okay. Besides Prince Edward Island, I only know 2 island names, and I'm just going to say those, which is it's Victoria Island is one of them that I know. And then is Vancouver Island a thing?
Yes. Vancouver Island is a thing, but it is not one.
Oh, it's not one of them. So I said Vancouver Island and Baffin Island.
Yes. So the 3 correct. Victoria Island is correct.
It isn't. Yeah.
So it's
up north.
Island,
really?
It's up
right?
North.
Yeah.
All three of them are up north. All three of them are part of Nunavut. But yes, so Victoria is one. Baffin is one.
Yeah.
And Ellesmere is the third.
Okay. I've
never heard of Ellesmere.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So, nice job. So Ricky, you know what? We'll give you 0.5 points, 6.5. That puts you second place all time. Wow. In the Canadian,
I mean,
quiz.
I think that was the best performance.
That was
time.
Definitely the best performance. I mean, DB got very lucky. He made a blind guess on one of the 3-point questions and got it correct.
Great.
So
great.
I'm actually making educated guesses, which was impressive.
I'm honestly amazed. Yeah. I don't know where some of these things are living in the recesses of my brain, but I guess kind of just through cultural osmosis, you know, the kind of slow trickle of Canadians down into the Midwest has taught me over time, you know. I forgot to mention, but I am one of the big things about Canadians here in America is the Canadian tuxedo is what we often refer to wearing denim on denim. So I figured to celebrate today, I would wear the denim shirt with the denim jeans.
Yeah.
And I do feel I was able to kind of embody the character a little bit
Absolutely.
More in that regard.
Oh, yeah. I think we felt it. I think our listeners felt it as well.
Certainly.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us so much, Ricky. Before we go, anything you'd like to plug?
Twitch.tv/RickyPeacock. That's where you can find me. I'm there Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and sometimes on the weekends. And also, I'm hanging around a lot with Stefan and JF and DBJ and plenty of people on the Goo Crew. So, Twitch is the primary place to find me. If you're in Chicago, you might be able to see me at the Improv at IO or Logan Square Improv sometimes. But that's mostly it.
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Give Ricky a follow on Twitch. Thank you so much for following us and listening to us. We hope you have a great holiday season, whatever holiday you're celebrating. We're going to be back. We obviously have another bonus episode to come this month. And then maybe we have a little special treat dropping on the free feed for you as well.
That's right.
But more on that to come. Thank you so much for listening and donating. And we'll see you back here very soon. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.